Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Thursday. So this just came out. There was some talk a week ago of Conor and Floyd changing their agreement. They have agreed to win at 154 pounds, fight 12 rounds, and wear 10-ounce gloves. Now, the gloves were very specific. No horsehair, no Mexican-made gloves. No, there was all this stuff in there. I don't know anything about it. I don't know what gloves are made out of, don't know where they're made, nothing. But it was very specific, is my point. There was a lot of details, and it was 10-ounce gloves, and most of that was pushed by Floyd's side. So somewhere along this process, Floyd has decided he wants to fight in 8-ounce gloves, to which Conor said, great, let's do it in 8. That could have been vice versa, where Conor said, let's do 8, and Floyd's like, okay, great, let's do 8. But either way, the discussion had come out, and I remember thinking when it did, that's really weird. Because now you got to go back and you got to do contracts. You got to clear it through commissions. There's just a lot of steps there for a couple of ounces. And you guys already kind of worked this out. What in the hell are we doing here? So this came out today from the ARP. Here's a quote. The Association of Ringside Physicians understands that consideration is being given to amend current regulations and in doing so permit the use of 8-ounce gloves in the forthcoming boxing match between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. This is a bout that has already been given a specific weight class, unless there is a scientific evidence to support the view that such a change might improve the safety of this bout, we would strongly caution against allowing current regulation to be overruled, and to do so would also set a precedent for future bouts. Well, that's a pretty mature statement. I can't think of any way that making the gloves smaller would make the bout safer. I'm open to hearing some things that possibly I'm not considering, but logically off the cusp, that sure sounds to make sense. My confusion on this is I've been fighting for 20 years and never in my life have I heard of the ARP. I don't know who this is. I don't know what board or council this is or what standing in the matter they would have. I don't disrespect them. If it's a group of physicians, that's certainly an honorable group. But I do find it a little bit weird that after 20 years in this sport and being licensed in the state of Nevada, which is the commission we're referring to in question, since 2002, I'm sitting here before you today, the first time I've ever heard the abbreviation ARP. And sometimes in this sport, you just wonder who's watching the store? Who's in charge? How many different bodies are going to spring up? Every single municipality, all of them, all 50 states have a body. A commission. You've then got the ABC that's operating out there. You've then got what's going on in Brazil. What's that called? Cabana? And now apparently we got an ARP. Association of Ringside Physicians. I feel like they make a fair point. I'm not angry at them in the least. I am a little surprised that they've got a standing in a matter in a sport that I've been participating in for 20 years, and I've never heard of them. It also sounds to me like that's a backroom deal. Jacob, that sounds to me, right off the cusp, like somebody made a claim in the media, meaning Floyd Mayweather, didn't want it, wanted to save face, and made a phone call to somebody that represents the ARP and had them write a letter stopping through the back door what he opened at the front door. That's what it sounds like to me. I don't give a damn if there's a conspiracy here or not, and I'm not trying to wave anything. I'm just, this is the news of the day. I read it, and the first thing I thought is, where these guys come from, how long have they been around, why have I never heard of them, and most importantly, did they really weigh in on this, or does somebody call them and say, hey, could you write a letter? We wrote a check that our ass can't cash here.
It sure sounds like it was backroom, because if you've never heard of them, there's got to be someone pulling their strings there.
It's a little bit bizarre. I mean, I think we could just chalk it up to that, but it is, what are we watching here? What's on TV?
Dan Patrick.
All right, and he's doing the same thing we are. He's talking about Malignaggi and Connor and Floyd and Connor. Listen, man, I'm a little bit sick of talking about it, quite frankly. I really am. There's nothing else going on. I mean, this is the hottest story in town. Why wouldn't we discuss it? There seems to be something new every day, which gives for new talking points. And quite frankly, there's nothing else going on in the world of fighting. Bellator didn't have a show this weekend. UFC doesn't have a show
till like a
this weekend.
Month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all holding out. It's back to school for the kids. Hunting season's around the corner. Summer is upon us. And we got Connor and Floyd. So let's ride this horse into the ground. Everybody else is. Why should we be any different over here? Why are we above what everybody else is doing, right?
Sure.
All right.
Let's roll with it.
And you know what? You commented to me earlier. You were asking me about my Casper mattress. I'm going to give you the hookup on that like I told you I would, but I want to tell everybody else. Casper is simply, if I was describing, I would just tell you it's the greatest night's sleep I've ever had. And I really do mean that. When Casper came on board with this show, they said, hey, listen, we need you to talk and say good things about us, but we also kind of need you to mean it. So we're going to send you one. And if you don't mean it, let us just move on to somebody else, but try it out. And I thought, okay, well, I'll do that. But what Casper was up against is I had just bought a mattress, and it cost $4,000. And I don't mean to impress anybody with the price of my mattress. That's just what a mattress cost. I've only bought one. The other mattress I had my whole life, my mother had bought me, right? I grew up on it. I never got a new mattress from the time I was a kid. I took it to college and everything else. And so my wife and I got a new mattress. And $4,000, I'm not going to throw that out just because somebody named Casper contacts me and wants to send me one, but I do need to try it. I have a responsibility to them, to the show. So I take my mattress off my bed, I put it in the garage, and I put the Casper on. And I think a normal person would get rid of their mattress, have Casper, whoever's bringing the new one, haul it away, whatever you want to handle that. I just wasn't sure, and a good night's sleep is really important to me, right? I want to feel good. I want to get some rest after a long day. So I store my mattress away. I put theirs on, and I never changed it. I loved it. They call it an obsessively engineered mattress. All right, I'll trust you on that. I don't know what in the hell you did to engineer the thing. All I could tell you is I lay down on it. It feels really comfortable. And my $4,000 mattress that was only about a year old, I think it was about 10 months, it's gone. I had it hauled out of the garage. I've never looked back. I moved houses. I took the Casper with me. It's just a really great mattress. If you're getting a good night's sleep, what doctors and experts say should be about 8 hours, that represents a third of the day, which is a third of your week, of your month, of the year, and of your life. If there's anything to get right, guys, it is your mattress. The Casper mattress has over 30,000 global reviews. Joseph G. from Colorado said, as a former athlete, sleep and comfort is key to performance, and Casper does that now for my life and for my wife. Dozens of pro basketball, baseball, and football players sleep on a Casper, and they rave about it. Skip the typical mattress shopping game. Buying a Casper is easy. Order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. Free shipping and free returns. It's available in the U.S., Canada, and now the U.K. Don't sit on the sidelines. Try the Casper for 100 nights in your own home. If you don't like it, send it back. You're going to get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/chael. Use the promo code CHAEL. That's CASPER.com/CHAEL. Use the promo code CHAEL. Terms and conditions apply. All right, you asked me about it. I'm telling you about it, but I want to save it for here so I can tell everybody else. What do you think?
Kudos. I like this.
Kudos. Stuff. You're welcome for that, by the way.
Thanks.
You're welcome for me filling in this. Okay, so let's get into it a little bit. What do you make of the gloves? I mean, is there a story here or not?
Well, first of all, the ARP, well, who are they? You brought that up, but You said they mentioned that it wasn't safe, or that it maybe it was safer to use lighter gloves.
They actually said they want evidence.
They want
that
evidence.
It's safer to use lighter gloves. Otherwise, let's stick with the heavier gloves.
That's kind of the point too. Isn't a lighter glove more beneficial to Connor? And if it is more beneficial to Connor, who's supposed to lose quickly, if you give him that much more of a fighter chance, doesn't that make it that much more dangerous?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that I would disagree with you. So here's the thing with the glove. Again, if we use logic, a bigger glove is safer. Logic being more padding. Logic being when we're in practice, I can tell you we'll wear 16 and 18 ounce gloves, never smaller than 16 ever, but a lot of guys 18, because the theory that padding is better. I think that we're right on that. But I will just for conversation share this with you. John McCain, Senator John McCain, he tried to end MMA right when MMA started. He went, I mean, publicly, and he was calling it human cockfighting. He tried to get it off TV and bury it before it ever grabbed its legs. Now, the backstory on that was his wife was an executive with Budweiser, who's the main sponsor of boxing, and they saw it as a threat. And as soon as John McCain got caught that this was his real initiative, he quickly stopped. But before he stopped, he goes, okay, well, you guys need to wrap your hands and wear gloves. You do that and I'll zip it, because they were fighting bare knuckle. As a matter of fact, it was bare knuckle, and then it went to gloves being optional. Well, that made sense to John that would make the sport safer. And I think that would make sense to most people. Where you go, well, you wrap your hands, you put gloves on, that's going to be safer. Well, no, wrong. As a matter of fact, when it was optional, the only guys that were wrapping their hands were the heavy hitters. The only guys that were putting on gloves were your big strikers, because what they knew is the wrap in the glove doesn't protect my opponent. It protects my hand. If we're bare knuckle, the sport is actually safer because you can't punch a guy very hard. You'll break your hand. And the average person may not understand that, but a fighter will never go into practice, not even to hit a bag or a mitt, without wrapping his hands and then putting his gloves on. It's to protect his hand, not the mitt or the bag, or in this case, your opponent. So McCain actually made the sport more dangerous. Now, I don't like that he did it because it was just a dumb move. He consulted nobody, talked to no fighters, and you know, he's kind of on the wrong side of me anyway for some other reasons. But the bottom line is this. He did apply logic. We do have to give him that. Logically, putting on a glove does make a sport safer. Logically, it had the opposite effect. So I did appreciate where the ringside physicians, I guess, did say, if you have evidence, then we'll listen to it. I don't think that there would be any. I do understand that. I think they're on the right side of this argument if safety is the issue. But there could be a discussion. You know, the Olympics, the IOC, shockingly to me, for amateurs, took away headgear. The boxers can no longer wear headgear, and that was for a safety issue. Somehow, Jacob, they tied that those headgear make it more dangerous, and that as you're transitioning from the Olympics, which is the highest end of the amateurs, to your next step, which is the pros, if you're not used to dealing with it without the headgear, your debut into the pros can be much more dangerous. So this is what they argued, shockingly to me, but successfully. So now the amateurs in the Olympic Games do not wear headgear. So even though logic says otherwise, they prevailed on these points, whatever those points were. And I don't have enough information to speak on that, but they did prevail on that. So if somebody did want to have a discussion about the lighter gloves, now, the athletes aren't going to help him in that. Floyd's saying, I'm going to beat his ass worse and faster if you make him smaller. And Connor's saying, I'll beat your ass worse and faster if you make him smaller. So the athletes are not going to support the ringside physician's proclamation that if you want to get this done, we need to know that it's safer. So I don't think there's going to be any headway. And the fight is well less than 2 weeks away. What are we, 10 days now?
Yeah.
Nine days now. Boy, that came up fast. That is one thing I do really like
single
about Floyd Mayweather. When Floyd Mayweather is going to fight somebody, he's going to fight him right now. I've always liked that about it. Is Floyd going to fight? Is he going to come out of retirement? If you'll remember when he fought Pacquiao, which was the biggest boxing event in the history of time, which I believe is about to be surpassed, but that is number one right now. He announced it 6 weeks before they were in the ring. I love that, because that's not what most fighters do. It's not what any MMA guys do. You know, you always have about 3 months, 10 weeks at a minimum. You have your rollout, you plan for it. When Floyd pushes that green button, he means it, and he means it right now. And as a fan, I don't want to wait. You tell me something this cool, I don't want to wait until 2018. I don't want to wait until July of next year to see Jones and Lesnar. If you guys are going to do it, let's do it.
So you mentioned some things about the gloves and the safety. I want to get back to that, but I want to stay on Floyd for just a second. So how long – do you remember the first time when the rumors of Mayweather versus Conor came out? How long ago was that?
Well, let's see here. So Conor had started that talk right after Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez was November of 2017. So he started it, I would say, right around then.
16, you mean?
17. Yes, I do. 16. The end of last year. Okay. So he started it right after that.
Okay, so it hasn't been that long,
no.
Per se. How long did it take? So we've talked a little bit about boxing being kind of the background sport. It takes forever to get a fight together. Like, you want to, it's harder to find the dream matchups in boxing than it is
definitely
like in UFC. Now, this one, even in my perspective as a fan, this seemed really fast to get this boxing match together.
Yep.
It's considering also that this was a cross sport
yep.
Matchup, but. So when was this officially, like, when did Floyd and Conor go, the paper's signed, the signature's on, the money's down, everything's good, we're fighting this August 26th?
Less than 2 months ago.
Less than two, okay, so
yeah.
There you go, 3 months
Which
ago.
Is right in line with what Floyd does.
Was that faster than most UFC fights even? Because it seems like UFC fights, we know who their next opponent is going to be, if they're still willing to fight, and usually they are. Maybe a couple months after their last one, and then it's like maybe 6 months later they'll fight.
Yep.
There's that whole buildup. Am I wrong? Is that the case?
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. I really like that about Floyd is when he announces I'm fighting, you don't have to wait. He's right away. I'm fighting, and here's the date, and it's right around the corner. And I think that's fun. I appreciate that, but not many guys do that. You know, I'll use UFC, for example, just because you brought that up. But, we were promised Bisping and George, I think in January, maybe February, but they're not going to fight until November. Now we're talking about Lesnar and Jones, which has more legs than a lot of people think, but that won't be until July of next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of that's annoying, and I only say it's annoying because, man, that'd be really cool to see. I want to see Bisping fight George St. Pierre. I want to see Lesnar and Joe, but I don't want to wait. Come on, I got to wait this long? I'm not going to gain anticipation. I'm going to lose a little bit of it. I think there's a brilliance there, and I don't think it's intentional. I think it's unintentional. It just worked out this way, but I think there's a brilliance there to Floyd doing that. Man, let's start a fire. And it's a basic law of biology. Anything that is red hot can only die off. So build it, start it, get the flame going, and get in the damn ring and do this thing. I like that about the way Floyd. I like it the way Floyd does it. I think if I was to guess, I think from a more strategic standpoint, nobody's going to turn down a fight with Floyd Mayweather. That's the big money fight. That has been the big money fight. He has handpicked his opponents since 2006. That's just the position he's in. So why not catch him off guard? Why not grab a guy who likes a 12-week training camp and inform him he gets 5.5? Mm-hmm. Why not do? I think that's probably what his move is. But either way, as a fan, we win. We win. Great. You're going to fight Oscar De La Hoya? Oh, my God. You're fighting him next month? Great.
Sounds good.
Great. Cool. It's totally compliment.
And I'm sure Conor is just fine with that, too. I mean, I wonder if that's how the buildup was even coming, because he wanted it to happen right now. He was right off his win over Eddie Alvarez, and now he was just like, I want to do this right now. And it is nice to, because I feel like there was the rumors of what if Conor fought Mayweather a little bit before that. Maybe Conor didn't say something, but maybe he dropped something. I don't know. I feel like I'm getting stuff mixed up.
Well,
but
no, you could be right. I could be getting it wrong. I just know it didn't gain any momentum till after the Eddie fight.
Right, because he was preparing for Eddie, and so that was while he was pushing. But yeah, I feel like there was something else too. And there was that point where Mayweather's dad came out, and he was someone brought up, what if Conor fought Floyd, and he was just like, who's that? Who's that guy? Yeah, we'd take care of him. We'd take care of him easily. And that was like a year ago, maybe, I feel like, and no one was even really paying much attention to it. It was just speculation. It was all speculation. But then Conor's like, hey, why not? And the fact that Floyd was open to it is great. After it, but I feel like this is a really good thing for not just boxing, but just fighting in general, like getting a fight together. Because this felt like if any fight, this felt like the one that would be the longest to build up. Like, we announce, George and Bisping, we have to wait a year. Or what was the other one? Jones and
Lesnar.
Lesnar, yeah. We have to wait a year. Maybe this will give them, the fighters, actually a chance. You know what? We just need the paper signed, a few months of training at max, and let's go fight each other. And then they'll give the fans will love it because then they'll get more and more fights. But then the fighters, I'll ask you this. Do you really like waiting that long when your fight is announced and you're like, how long do I have to wait for before I have to fight this guy? Do you really like that?
No, I personally do not. Now, but you will get different opinions from guys. If you're looking for popular opinion, it may not be the one I'm going to say right now. But no, I don't like to wait. But I also come from the old school of if you're always ready, you never have to get ready, go to practice every day, blah, blah, blah. But I believe that. So for me, no. If we're going to fight, let's just fight on Saturday, or let's just do it tonight, or you know, however long it takes to make the weight. There is a couple of contractual things you got to agree on there. But no, that's really enough time from a competitive standpoint. Now the promotion and the business side of it does need time to do a little bit of a rollout. They got to book their venue, do their on sales. You know, there is some moving parts there that everybody kind of needs to fall in line with. But no, I don't see why you would wait. Now there are other guys. Luke Rockhold's one of them, and I bring him up because he is the opposite theory as mine, and the guy's absolutely amazing. So I think his opinion should matter, but he's not in the gym at all until he has a fight signed. He gets out of the ring, they don't see him again at AKA. 10 weeks before a fight, boom, he's busting his ass twice a day, and that's how he whips himself back into shape. Dan Henderson would be another great example. He is not in there unless he has a contract signed. Randy Couture is where I got my theory from. That he was a guy who if he fought on Saturday, he was at practice on Monday.
I have to be a little careful with that argument because I am coming from like the season of sports background, like football camp's going on right now, preseason's underway. They all have the same amount of time to prepare. The training starts this time, you have so many days to prepare, and then you're good. It doesn't matter if you're ready or not, you play. You're good to go. Some teams, football teams will have a game every week and then they have the week to prepare. Baseball players, they get no time to prepare. They just keep going. They keep rolling. Basketball, maybe a few days. I just think it's weird that fighting is the one of the few sports where you had to wait. I mean, how long does it, there's such a thing as over preparing for an opponent.
Sure.
Like dissecting them to pieces and then you start working against yourself. At a certain point, it's time to turn off that part of your brain that's just like over analyzing everything to death, and then just go out and do what you know how to do. And if you already know what you're going to do, are you warmed up to do what you're going to do? Yeah, then you're ready to go.
You know, I had to wait. I got a quick story for you on the same time. I had to wait twice. One time, I had a fight scheduled with a gentleman named Paulo Filho. We were going to fight for the world championship, and it was in Florida. And my family had got out there, and I was supposed to leave the next day. They went a little early. They were going to check out Florida and, I think, go to Disney Park or what Disney World's out there. And anyway, they beat me out there by a day. Well, some hurricane hit, and the airports got shut down. I couldn't get in. Nobody could get in. They canceled the whole show. So, but at the last minute, I mean, the wait was cut. The work was done, and then we got to reschedule, and it's 3 months later. Blah, blah, blah. So I had to prepare for the same guy twice, and this was a rematch, so it was technically the third time I was preparing for him. And that is a blow, and a lot of fighters go through that. That's just the one that I had to go through where it didn't work out. We had this date, an opponent, a set, and a weight class, and the whole bit, and it didn't work out. Let me give you an update. Enough of that. Let me tell you this. I had a cool experience. So Paulo Filho, does that name ring a bell for you? He was the man. Let's see, 2006 to 2009, I would say that's right, 2005, 2008, I'm really close, but he was the man, 16-0, this pride champion. He was ranked number one in the world. Put that in perspective for you, Anderson Silva was number two, Dan Henderson was number three, I was number nine, this was the guy. And so he and I had this fight, and it was a really weird night. Something was going on with him, but it was this weird night, and we'd be fighting each other, and he would turn his head and look away, then he'd start talking. And no one ever knew. Was he seeing things? Who was he talking to? Was it to his coach? It really didn't make a bit of difference who it was. I'm right in front of him throwing punches at him, and he's turning his head and talking to someone. It was just something weird had happened, okay? Got to leave it at that, because that's all I know. And he was the champion. He'd never been beat. 16-0, number one guy in the world. They cut him. It was such a weird happenstance, they cut him. that night. I won the fight, so now he's 16-1. He's still ranked number one in the world until the new rankings come out, and then he's only going to fall to 3 or 4. They cut him. Changed his life. I kind of lost touch with him. So he's from Brazil, so he goes back to Brazil. So I didn't have like a great path. He was my opponent and enemy at the time, so we didn't have numbers or emails or anything like this, but I didn't care about the guy. I mean, this is a competitor. This is a guy that, you know, we've got a history together. I want him to go on and have a great life. I want to beat him that night, but I want him to have a good life. And I just lost touch. Well, somewhere along the way, this had made media and I read about it, but he was at a party and someone shot him. And it like shot him in the leg, got in some dispute, and the guy stands up, pulls a gun out, and just shoots him in the leg. Well, that's not great. That's not what I want to hear. That's not good news. And I just really lost touch. And I think he did a couple of more fights, but they were in Brazil. They weren't over here in a major promotion that you would hear about. And that was the end. Okay. Well, he sent me a video. He sent a video to my coach, who is Brazilian, last week. He just kind of told me what he was doing, and I loved it. He puts the camera on himself. He filmed. It gives me an update. He brought up our match and our history, and very pleasant. He looked different. He had a beard now. He was clean shaven when I fought him. And it was just, I guess it was just a cool thing. But also, there's a lot of our listeners out there that are the same boat as me, where it's like, hey, we were Paulo Filho fans. How's the guy doing? So I could tell you from the video, he was very coherent, handsome, looked happy. And he said hello. And I'm saying my hello is back. So there you go.
Awesome.
Pretty cool. It's pretty cool to get an update. You know, it doesn't really matter if it's an old classmate, a childhood friend, a neighbor that moved away, or in this case, an opponent that you haven't seen in 8 years. Updates are cool. You know, it's fun. It's fun you know, what they're up to and make sure you check in on them a little bit, see they're doing good. He looked great.
Nice. On that note, I've been wondering this a little bit just because this is kind of related to what you're saying. How it's a funny question. Do the enemies and the friends change often in the UFC based on, oh man, I'm buddies with him. Now I got to go fight him. Oh man, he beat me and now I hate him. We're not buddies anymore. We hate each other, but I beat you.
Yes.
Now we're buddies.
Yes.
Does that change all the time?
Yes.
Does your friend and enemy list fluctuate every day, basically?
Yes. Maybe not that quickly, but yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I don't know that I've gone through it to give you to personalize the story, but a great example would be John Jones and Rashad Evans. These guys were teammates. I mean, Rashad called him my little brother. And Rashad was supposed to fight for a world championship. He got hurt, and so they picked Jones. They go, all right, Jones is going to take it then. And it's kind of this weird thing because that was John's belt he was supposed to go after. They were or Rashad's belt. He was looking to recapture it. He was the guy. Physically, it looked like maybe John was the guy, but name-wise and notoriety and rankings, Rashad was the guy. And so John took the fight, but he talked to Rashad first. Hey, man, you care if they're offering me this fight? You good with me taking it? I mean, he did everything you could possibly do to be respectful when you're a young guy in the gym. And Rashad said, yeah, man, let's go get a world championship. So John won it. And all of a sudden, the promotion's going, hey, that was Rashad's title. You've now got it. You got to fight Rashad. And these guys are going, whoa, no. We're teammates. That's never going to happen. The promotion's like, I'm good with all that teammate stuff. Rankings, 1 and 2. New champion versus former champion. This is the fight. And that's the business. And the media split them up. They started weighing in back and forth. And Rashad was always, no. Just period, no, the end. That's my teammate. And Jones finally said in an interview somewhere, he was still singing that. He was still singing that, no, we're teammates, blah, blah, blah. And then he finally goes, well, yeah, I mean, I would fight him. But no, that's not the fight I want. I don't think that's going to happen. But he slipped that in there. He goes, well, I would do it. And so Rashad's like, well, wait a second. If you're now saying you would... Well, then I would too. You know, I'm not going to bitch out of this and blah, blah, blah. And next thing you knew, Rashad had packed up, left that camp, moved to a different state, and those guys were fighting.
Wow.
Yeah. But I could give you a few stories like that. I just give you that one because I know you would recognize those two names. But yeah, you know, and my dad used to tell me, you know, I never had anything like that. Again, you come from a wrestling background like I did. Say you're in high school. You're going to have a wrestle off for the varsity team. You and your teammate are going to go into the room, shake hands. The coach is going to officiate it, and whoever's got more points is going to wear the singlet on Thursday night in front of the school. I mean, it's just the way it was. So you saw each other in the hallways, and then you go work out with each other. And the day was, you have lunch together. That's just the way it was. There was no big deal. I got more points than you. I'm the guy. You got more points than me. You're the guy. That's just the way it was. And my buddies that were football players, it was the same thing. We'd all have lunch together and be friends, but at some point they went up on the field, and it wasn't as simple as a wrestle off where you could quite quantify it like that. But yeah, they'd run their plays and their thing. The coaches would watch them, and they had a system, and one guy goes on and the other guy's on the bench. And that's just the way it was. And it, when you come from some other sports, you can really get your feelings hurt on that. And, you know, I was in there with Dan and Randy and Matt Lindland every day, and we go, you know, we're beating the hell out of you. It's practice. We're in there fighting each other every day, but there was no problem. If they would have matched any one of us up, it wouldn't have mattered. I could have been in there with Randy. I could have been in there with Dan. Dan could have been in there with Matt. Matt could have been in there with Randy. Any which way you want to do it. And then we'll all be at practice on Monday and work on it. I mean, it was a different thing. Whereas if, then you take Nate Diaz, for example. Nate, Nick, and Jake, and Gilbert, the scrap pack. Man, don't even bring that up with them. A blasphemy. They would never be so unloyal. How terrible could you even suggest such a thing? So there's different mindsets. And I'm not saying who's right or wrong. I don't know that anybody's right or wrong. I'm just saying there's different mindsets.
I feel like the hard part of that would be not exactly the fight, because you spar each other all the time in the gym. It would be the lead up to it, and like you were saying, the media involving it, where you have to look tough, you have to look like you want the fight, you have to talk down your opponent. Well, you don't have to, but you have to make it look like you're not wimping out on anything.
Sure.
You have to look like you're going all out. I feel like that would be the difficult part for most people, not so much the fight.
If your objective is to stay friends, if your objective is to stay teammates and stay friends, then yes, you that would be a bit of a slippery slope.
At the same time, though, you've gone up to your friends and you're like, let's see who's better. Let's give it our all. Let's see who can beat each other. And you might get a little angry during the fight, like, oh, you threw that at me, I'll throw one back at you. And then there's some blood flying around, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, you take a few minutes, all right, that's over. Let's go have lunch, I guess.
If you can do that, and I subscribe to what you're saying, because I've been on both sides of it, man. I beat my friends, but I've been whipped by my friends too. And, you know, it moves forward, and sometimes you get them back, or sometimes they get you back, or sometimes you never get, whatever the situation may be. So from my mindset, it would work, but I think I'm probably in the minority on that. But that's just how I came up. The guys that were older than me, you know, Matt Lindland was my coach in high school. Put this in perspective. I'm 17 years old. He was my coach. And once I got out of high school and into college, now I'm on what they call the senior level. Matt and I end up in the same bracket, and we have to wrestle first round at the Sunkist tournament. Well, my dad sponsored Matt for that tournament. So my dad gave him money and flew him out there and got his hotel, did the whole thing. And now we got to wrestle. Matt had no problem beating my ass in front of my father, who flew him out there. I mean, he didn't even think twice about it. I'll tell you what happened in the match. In this sport of wrestling, if you are 10 points ahead of your opponent, they stop the match. It's called a technical fall. I think there's something called a mercy rule.
Yeah.
That's in baseball?
Yeah.
You get a head by X amount, you just stop the game.
Yep, same thing.
The guy's never going to catch you. Let's just stop the game. So that's basically what a technical fall in wrestling is. You get X amount of points. In this case, it's 10 ahead of your opponent. At any point, they just stop. We're done. So Matt's ahead by 9. He's ahead 9. This is my coach. Who's going to beat their coach? I'm 19 years old, right? He's 20. No one's going to beat their coach. He's ahead by 9. He picks me up off the mat. He could just tip me. He could just turn me over nice and peacefully, get 2 points. Now it's 11-0. He exceeds the 10-point must. We're done. Picks me up off the mat, turns me around, and what's called a belly-to-back suplex, which is the most single violent and vicious thing you could ever do to somebody in Greco-Roman wrestling. Picks me up off the mat, turns me around, and launches me right over the top, throws me for 5+1. It ends up being like 15-0 when the rules only allow you to get to 10-0. I mean, I've never even seen a mat. But that was the mentality I grew up with. If I could have done it to him, I would have done it to him. And we went out and had dinner that night. He coached every match that I had the rest of the day in the wrestle packs. I ended up getting through. I came back through. He wins the whole tournament. He was in my corner for every day. He's warming me up. He's preparing me. He was my coach. But in those few minutes, he was handing me a lesson that there is no friends from 9 to 5. There is no deals from 9 to 5. You go as hard as you possibly can. You score as many points as you possibly can. You live with the result. Whoever steps on the mat against you. And I tell you the story, and we sit here and laugh about it, but it was a very valuable story for me. I don't remember a lot of my wrestling matches or even my fights. I have to go back and watch them. But I remember that one. I remember the mat we were on, what he was wearing, what I was wearing, because I did leave there with a lesson, which was that it doesn't matter who it is. Competition is competition. You do the best you can against anybody you're out there against, whether it's your athlete, your friend, your coach, whoever it is.
Yeah.
And not everybody shares that mentality, and I want to say that they have to. But I do, and that's one of the stories in my past as to why I do.
It's a good lesson, too, because it teaches you to be objective. The faceless opponent, basically. You go out and treat every day like it's, well, the championship. Sure, if you want that mentality, but it keeps you from going, it keeps you like from looking at someone and going, oh, this guy's an easy opponent.
Sure.
Or, oh, man, this guy's a hard opponent. I'm going to change something. No, you just go out there and go 110% on everybody. That's all it needs.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
But that is what competition is. There's no nice days, easy days, this guy, that guy, anybody, anywhere, anytime. Or you're in the wrong field. I would suggest that you're in the wrong field. And when you put it in a team sport, it's never even in question. It could be your best buddy. You get drafted this way. He gets drafted that way. You meet up on Sunday in a football game and you play. But in team sports, absolutely no problem. You tackle him. You block his pass. Whatever it is you're doing, you go play. But there is something about a combat sport that those rules change. You know, they're a little bit more personal. There's just a little bit more on the line. I think we can all understand that. I don't think I need to give a great explanation. I think that it speaks for itself, but it does change things.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
You would agree with that. Even not doing it, you could see.
Yeah, it's you against him. That's way more personal.
You're trying to hurt one another. You're trying to do damage to one another. You're trying.
I want to see blood coming out of your nose at the end.
Yeah. I had two teammates in college, Doug Lee and Troy Hughes, two absolute studs. They were roommates and they were the same weight class. And to the wrestle-off point that I made, they had to go wrestle-off each other for the varsity spot. I mean, scholarships are on this year. The whole reason you're in college, you know, in wrestling, there is no JV team. There is no bench. There is nothing like that. There's just the guy that gets to go out and compete. Everything's on the line. They drove to the match. They were roommates. They got in the car and drove to the match together, warmed up with each other, and then went and did the match. And when it was done, drove back home and, I imagine, watched TV or whatever you did. You know, I mean, that was it, but that's just the way it was. So I came up a little bit differently on that. And the experience that I had, I think, from an amateur wrestling background, that my mindset's a little different and probably in the minority. I don't know that I don't know that there's anybody right or wrong. I'll tell you this, though. How often do you think about your socks? Jacob, if you're like I used to be, probably not much at all. But I recently discovered socks that have changed the way I think about socks forever. They're called Bombas, Bombas, and they are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. I'm telling you right now, they actually feel great. I usually only wear socks when I have to put shoes on. Now that I have Bombas, I wear them around the house. I just wear them around the house. They just feel really comfortable. And every pair comes with a built-in blister tab, innovative arch support, stay-up technology, and a seamless toe. Bombas are what feet daydream about. And for every Bombas purchase you make, Bombas will donate a pair to someone in need. Keep cool, keep comfortable, and keep contributing with the best socks in the history of feet, Bombas. Buy one pair or four at bombas.com/chale today and get 20% off of your first purchase. It doesn't matter how many you buy, guys. You're going to save 20%. That's a big savings. You guys are welcome for that, by the way. That's Bombas, bombas.com/chale for 20% off. Bombas.com/chale. Get yourself 20% off.
Hey, everyone. It's former WWE host Lillian Garcia. Ask you a question. Do you ever wonder how your favorite stars make it to the big time? Then come check out my new show, Chasing Glory, with Lillian Garcia on podcast1.com. Hear me chat with some of your favorite athletes and entertainers about their rise to the top. It's about to get real, raw, and inspiring. So join me for new episodes every Monday on podcast1.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
We talked about, Jacob, and you, this was a long time ago, man, probably 5 months ago. We talked about a South Korean fighter in the UFC. I think it was his debut fight, so now he's only done one. But he took a he was suspected of taking a dive in the UFC. Do you remember this?
I vaguely remember. Okay. It. Refresh me a tiny bit.
Well, that's all you should. That's all I remember too. South Korea. I think the show might have even been in South Korea. They loaded up with some local guys. I think that's how he got in. I don't know that he had some major skills to speak of, but the bottom line, he had taken a dive. And then, like, at the last second, decided not to. I can't remember the outcome of the bout. If he did lose but didn't try to lose, or if he ended up winning but promised the mob he would lose or something like that. There was some goofy deal. Well, he just got indicted. And you have to do that. When you have a sport that's true and a guy takes it, you have to do something. And when you factor in betting, that gaming that some cities and even states rely on as their number one economic and tourist attraction, this has to be handled right. It's the whole reason commissions got involved, because boxing got so dirty, and from these mafia gangsters, quite literally, were just corrupting the sport and the outcomes and betting on it and laundering money. Just, it was a big mess. So now that you see that in 2017, you got to do something about it. That, we all understand that. But there's a part of me that can't help feel for this guy. I couldn't even produce his name for you. Don't know the guy. Don't even know his name. I feel for him based on movies I've seen. Now, I realize real life isn't like movies, but all I can think of, my only ability to at all relate, is what I've seen on TV. And usually when a guy has to take a dive, it is for the mafia. There's a major threat made. And if he double-crossed them at the last second, he's as good as gone, at least in the movies. Okay. But even when they approach him, he's not usually just doing it for the money. They're strong-arming him some kind of way. I just felt like maybe there's more to the story on his side. I felt a little bit bad for him. Seems like a tough spot to be in. If he was just a dirtbag that tried to corrupt a fight, then my argument goes out the window. But that's not what I've seen in Digstown and the other movies, and this is what I'm relating it to. So there's a part of me that's like, hey, maybe this guy needs to be in hiding somewhere, because it sounds like he's on the wrong side of some people.
There's, I mean, how many, even in the movies, how many times have you seen an athlete really want to throw a fight? I can think of one movie, and that would be Eight Men Out, when the Chicago White Sox threw the World Series back in 19...
Is that a true story?
True story, yeah.
What? Yeah. I don't know the story.
Okay, so the story goes, there was the White Sox, they were the best team in baseball. There was not even, it was a joke how good they were. They're up against, I think it was the Cincinnati Reds. And everyone knew it was going to be a sweep. I think it was a best 5 of 9 games. They were going to win in 5 games. So the White Sox were actually also known for being rather underpaid. Like and back in those days, a decent contract was up in $12,000 or something like that. They were getting paid. Their stars were getting paid maybe $4,000 or $5,000.
Wow.
So this owner, if I can't remember his name. I think it was Comiskey. I might be saying that wrong. Anyway, he was a tightwad pocket man, kept his money to himself, barely dished out anything. Well, anyway, some betting dudes.
Pocket man? Did you just make that term up?
Kept his pocket. Kept his money.
No,
close.
I know what it means. Pocketed. Did you just make that up? Pocket man.
I guess so.
That means tightwad. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
That could turn into something. I like that. All right, this guy's a pocket man.
Okay.
Go ahead.
He's a pocket man, and he's not paying his star players. Anyway, so some betting guys, like mafia-ish people, get their ears on this, and they have this idea to throw the World Series. So they actually do. They get about 9 of the White Sox players to throw the series. There's like some hitters or some pitchers involved. And they said, we'll pay you some of the winnings. Well, what ended up happening was this gigantic mess where the gamblers weren't paying the players their money that they were promised. So the players would start to win games. The White Sox players who were supposed to throw the games, they started winning games, and all the gamblers would lose their money again. They're saying, pay us our money or we're going to just win the World Series, because at this point we're
sure.
Just not.
We had a deal.
We had a deal, and then they start it turned into a mess. Bottom line, they get caught, they get exposed, they go to court. They were not indicted by Supreme Court, but then baseball, the commission, decided to suspend the players. And that's part of the reason why, you know, Pete Rose, right? That's part of the reason why baseball has this no forgiveness level on sports betting. You can't bet on your own team. You can't bet on you can't do anything. Betting
same
is
as
like,
MMA.
Yeah, you can't do it. There's no forgiveness there. No second chances. But yeah, that's the only thing I can think of where a player actually willingly, in movies, willing, but that was real life, willingly bet to lose a game. Every other movie I've seen, it's been the athletes like, heck no.
Okay, so wait, so how did it end after the best of nine? Did the Sox win or did they go down?
They lost.
All right.
They lost. The Reds won the World Series and everyone was shocked. That was shocking enough. But yeah, that the White Sox lost the series. Here's the interesting part.
They brought
though.
In nine guys. Come on, you can't keep a secret with one guy. You could definitely not keep a secret with nine.
True.
Of course this story came out.
Here's the interesting part, though. Two of those players, we suspect, knew what it was going to happen. And one of them, I think, was even paid. But two of them decided not to play subpar. Like, one of them went all out. One of them, at that point, home runs were rare. One of them even had a home run. And his teammates were like, dude, slow down. We're trying to throw the words. You're jeopardizing our money, too. And he was just like, he never said this, but his attitude was like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. He actually said to his coach before the series started, I don't want to play. And his coach was like, what are you talking? Of course you're playing. Get out there. Get your glove on. But he was just like, I don't feel right. And then he just played as hard as he could. And there was this other guy who told the guys to take a hike. But he at least knew it was going on. He same thing. He played as hard as he could. It was literally just a money thing. They wanted to get revenge against their owner who was cheaping them out, wouldn't give them their bonuses and all that. But that was it all came down to money. But very few, I'm sure it hurt. How many athletes would willingly throw a game?
Right.
That's so against everything. Even the guys who you don't like as athletes. Like, there's always the bad boy in athletes. When was the last time he actually wanted to lose? No, he's a bad boy because he talks dirty on everyone that he's going to beat at.
Sure.
That's
no,
why everyone hates
I
him.
Got it. And, you know, money gets really weird in sports. You know, I try to tune it out a little bit just because those same athletes you're talking about, without even knowing your story. But I know the history of baseball. I mean, I know it starts at Little League. I know it starts in the driveway with your dad or your mom or your brother or sister, whoever will throw a ball back and forth with you. There was no money. They didn't get into this for the money. They got in it and laid in bed at night dreaming of winning the World Series. That's why they got in it. So now all of a sudden they're in it. They're getting some money, but they decide, well, it's not enough money. And it's just hard for me to cry for these guys. It's like, come on. You know, what are we doing here? You've forgotten yourself why you got into this, chasing the dream, chasing the glory. You forgot yourself. And, you know, it's tough. I can remember the strikes going on, or at least threatening to go on with the NBA and some of this other stuff. And, you know, these guys felt slighted, but it's like, well, but you're forgetting. Remember back to when you were a little kid. Remember this was your goal, to put on that Lakers jersey and walk out there, play in front of a sold-out arena, try to win a championship. And it's just that things change. It just changes over time. It changed with money, and it gets a little weird for me. It gets a little weird.
Hence the famous quote from the movie, though. A kid comes up to the dude, Shoeless Joe Jackson, who actually was one of the guys who did not willingly throw the World Series. He was the guy playing hard, but he was in court. But then a kid comes up to him and delivers the quote, "Say it ain't so, Joe," and he's got nothing to say to him because that's why the kids watch it. They don't watch games or sports even for the money. They watch it because it's inspiring.
Right.
It's what they want to do when they grow up. They see that and they're like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
It's all back into why we like sports. There was that who called on like 2 weeks ago. He had lost a fight and he was just like, I love this sport. I love getting hit. I love hitting people.
Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, I'll fight anybody who comes out at me. I just love this game. And I don't know. He may have even used the word game because he just loves the sport. The money doesn't matter to him.
Yeah. And he meant it. And it is just a weird thing. And I don't really know how to finish this thought other than, you know, if you took all the money out of the NBA, you're not taking LeBron out. LeBron's still showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Curry's still showing up. The right guys come every time. Make no mistake. Every 4 years when they put a gold medal around somebody's neck at the Olympic Games, it's the right guy. The right guy shows up every single time. And, you know, you look at these things and where the money gets in problems. And I mean, the NBA is a great example because they were threatened. Did they go through with it? They were threatening the strike, though. You remember that. And
There was a shortened season a few years back.
Yeah, you know, where they're putting this whole thing off. And it's like, well, you look at what goes on with the NCAA right now. NCAA is the scum of the earth. And over a significant period of time, but hopefully in my lifetime, those guys will be paid. I mean, the scam that they have pulled on these college athletes, that they're selling out, you know, Michigan, 101,000 people, University of Oregon, 48,000 people, sold out every time, not a seat, not even a question, sold out. And this goes arena after arena after arena. The TV deals, the contracts, the merchandising. I mean, it is the scum of the earth, but they're getting away with it. They got away with it because they've never gotten away from it. But eventually, they will have to start paying some guys. There's going to be some court suits and some lawsuits and probably even some back pay going on retroactively. But, I mean, labor, these are adults. So now you're dealing with labor law. It gets so much more sophisticated when you finally get the right attorneys involved in this. But what I'm saying is, when that time comes, if you look back, not one of the right players anywhere in the country for football is sitting it out because they're not paying. Not one. Never happened, never going to happen. The right guys come forward every single time, whether there's money there or not, and they should. It's sport. It's a game. Kids play games. Most people have to pay to play games. If you want to go shoot 8 rounds of golf right now, so is that the right term?
Nine
whatever.
Rounds.
What?
18.
What did I say? Whatever.
You were close.
Whatever. The point is, you got to pay. Yeah. So now you're taking these grown-ass men that contribute nothing to society, and they're going to go play a game, they're going to get paid for it. Oh, come on. You know, good for you. I'm glad that exists. Good for you. But I'm not going to feel bad for you if you only made $30 million last year. I'm just not. You're playing a game.
That's kind of the nice part, because it's – especially in sports where athletes are allowed to, where sports are, I'm talking the Olympics specifically, where athletes are allowed to come from the professional venues. Back in the days, it was all amateurs.
Right.
But now you can bring professionals. It actually is refreshing to see, well, it's when they announce the rosters for a lot of these sports, a lot of them, you don't see a lot of stars anymore. And I wonder if that has to do a little bit with the money, just a little bit. But then the guys who do come out and they're like, yeah, I'll play against... I'll try to be the best in the world with some teammates right over here. And you see a few stars, but they're not like the top-notch guys, it seems, anymore. It's the guys who are just playing. In this case, it would be for their country, but they're just trying to play against... They want to beat Spain for basketball. They want to beat Lithuania, the mega powerhouses, or if it's wrestling. It's amateur guys who want to be the best in the world. And then if they get paid later, great. But that's kind of the real podium. The pay is the reward. It's not why you do it. It's like, hey, you're good at it. Congratulations. You got this far. But leading up to that, you got a gold medal. You stood on the podium. You are the best in the world. Have some dough.
Sure.
Good work.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. And the Olympics does, to your point, yes, it's not like it used to be. But, you know, the Williams sisters will still enter. Andre Agassi, of course, the Dream Team. I can remember in 1992 was the first Olympic cycle where the Dream Team, that's where that whole expression, that Dream Team came about, was 1992. The Olympics had absolutely nobody that had gone professional, but they finally ruled right before the 92 games that you can be a professional in your sport as long, we'll change the definition, as long as you are not paid for this event. So you can be paid in basketball all you want, but as long as you're not paid to play these games, you qualify. Now, again, that was just a way to get around paying guys. I said the NCAA is the scum of the earth. Well, the IOC is the very next in line. And if they were more than every 4 years, they would take the cake. But the NCAA... because it's year round, they're the number one offenders here. But I mean, that's the greatest trick the devil ever played, was convincing the world he didn't exist, and the IOC convincing people that they should not get money while they're out taking massive amounts of money is beyond underhanded. You know, the history of the Olympics is very fascinating. My uncle won an Olympic gold medal, never talks about it. Finally got it out a few Christmases ago. Also won 2 NBA championships. I say, how come you never talk about this? You know, and when I asked him to go get his medal, Christmas was at his house. He went upstairs. It took 20 minutes to even find this thing. He said, well, you know, it was just different. He said, the Olympics, when I won it, he was in the team in 1964, Tokyo. He goes, you know, I didn't really want to go to the Olympics. We kind of had to go, and it was a bit of a burden. It wasn't commercialized in this big honor like it is today. And he said, even when I won my NBA championships, I won 2 of them, but there was only 8 teams in the league. We only had to beat 7 teams. I'm not super proud of it. I'm cool. Really cool it happened. I'm glad people compliment me and all of that stuff. He goes, but at the time, I didn't really feel like bragging that I was on a team that was better than seven others. It just didn't feel like that was a, I just thought that was a really honest answer. Well, if you study the history of the Olympic Games, if you go way back to when it started, it was pure amateurs and it was a bunch of white guys. This, now the races matter. The race does matter because of the time period that this was in. It was just like some buddies that wanted to go do some stuff and then hand each other medals. I mean, this is where everything starts with something, right? eBay started in a guy's garage. Amazon started in a guy's garage. Well, so the Olympics, it kind of started this little neighborhood. So then as it grew from there and other nations started to get involved, and actually they had a rule, Jacob, you could not have any kind of professional experience whatsoever. You had to be purely amateur. And it was to the point that if you had a job in labor, you were disqualified. Say you were a ditch digger. You were paid to dig ditches. Well, that would build your muscle and build your cardio and build your endurance. Yeah, but no, you were banned from the Olympics. Isn't that crazy? It sounds crazy when I say this to you, but I mean, again, Amazon started in a guy's garage. This is how things happen. And then over time, they kind of work out the kinks. But this is where the Olympics was. They would not let anybody in of any level that had any pay for
hard work, even.
There you go. Yeah, for hard work, even. They were banned from the games. That's how much they were. Then it makes me wonder, well, could they even practice? Were guys allowed to practice? If you were in badminton, did you show up at the Olympics and go, I'm an athlete, and you go, okay, well, this is a sport you're in, or could you go for a specific sport and practice? I don't know the answer to that.
I think I'm basing this again off another movie, Chariots of Fire, 1924 Olympics. One of the runners was in trouble because he hired a professional coach. So they could train, but I don't think they could even have a professional, like, who was paid to train people.
Okay, then you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, that's where it came from. In the Olympics, before they got commercialized, I guess they weren't a big deal. I mean, that was even just in 1964, which on one hand sounds like a long time ago, but on the other hand, it's really not that long ago.
It was
my uncle was there.
Out, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't even want to go. He was the star of the team. He was the starter of the play that won the gold medal. He didn't want to be there. He told me, he was like, it was kind of a burden. We had to go to Tokyo and, you know, I had to fly in here and take a barge over. I just didn't want to do it. My coach kind of told me it'd be good, made me good. Yeah, they didn't want to go. Hmm. That's hard for me to imagine because now, I mean, people will cut off their right arm to be an Olympian.
Oh, yeah.
But in 1964, I mean, they didn't want to go.
Hmm. I don't have much to say about that. That's just how much the world has changed.
Yeah, how much the world has changed. Yeah, and you know, you don't even need to comment as much as I just thought that would fascinate you. Even what he said about his world champion. So he won the Olympics in 64. He won the NBA for the Celtics in 65. He was a bench guy in 65, even though he was the star of the amateurs in 64. But, you know, he was still paying his dues. And he just said, can't really brag about eight teams. World champion, you know, the whole country didn't even have a team. There wasn't a team in every city or every state like there is now. It wasn't even like that. And, you know, they're going to call it a world champ. We beat seven guys. It's like I beat seven guys when I was in high school just to, you know, make it to the state playoffs. He's like, the state tournament has 74 teams. I won a world championship by beating seven. And he put it in perspective for me, and I don't want to downgrade what he did. I still think it's an amazing accomplishment, but he doesn't. Which I think is probably more of a compliment to my uncle, to his humility on that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But don't you think? If you had an Olympic
gold medal
and two world championships, I mean, don't you think maybe you'd wear one of those every now
or
and then?
Or at least hang it up in the living room.
My cousin told me just recently, my cousin Brian told me that, yeah, for Halloween one year, he was going as a basketball player and his dad goes, oh, here, before you go, and throws the Olympic gold medal around his neck to go wear to school. He just marched around school, Olympic gold medal. Didn't know it was any big deal. Handed it back to him at the end of the day. Uncle, like, kind of threw it somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, it's just, it's different. Different day, different time. All right, guys. A&E. A&E's Emmy-nominated groundbreaking docuseries, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath, has returned for season two. New episodes every Tuesday. At 9 o'clock, 8 Central, on A&E, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath, follows Leah Remini along with other high-level former Scientology executives and church members as they delve deep into the shocking stories of abuse, heartbreak, and harassment experienced by those who have left the church and spoken publicly about their experiences. This season, Leah Remini continues her quest to give a voice to victims of the Church of Scientology. This series also explores accounts of former members whose lives have been significantly impacted by the church practices. Rimini is helping people take action, turning survivors into fighters, revealing truths, and seeking justice. Catch up on episodes on the A&E app and AETV.com. It's an amazing show. And guys, if you haven't seen it, you can also catch the first season, available on demand and on the app. Leah Remini, Scientology, and the Aftermath. You got to check it out. Jacob, final thoughts?
I got to go to the Olympics now. I'm when are they next? Next year.
Do you have a joke? I'd like a joke. Do you have a joke? Let's tell the audience a joke. That might be a new segment. Any jokes going on? I used to get told jokes all the time. I can't remember the last time I've been told a joke.
Wow, you caught me off guard. I got a really bad one, but I can't tell you. It's
bad as in dirty?
No, it's bad as in it's a three-part.
Yeah, let's not tell a dirty joke.
No, it's a bad one as in you have to wait like 2 minutes for the punchline to come.
Oh, God, I hate those jokes.
Yeah,
I hate those jokes. You want to hear the biggest scumbag joke like that ever? You want me to tell you the biggest one I have? And then if you can trump this... Don't do it. This is going to be a giant middle finger to our audience. If anybody wants to turn this show off, turn it off right now. Do you want to hear the most annoying joke ever my sister told me?
Let's hear it.
Kid, 8th birthday's coming up. His dad says to him, it's going to be your birthday. What do you want? Kid says, I want a box of pink golf balls. The dad goes out, it's his birthday, gets him a box of pink golf balls. He says, thanks, dad, goes outside and plays, comes back, all the pink golf balls are gone. His dad says, what'd you do with the pink golf balls? The kid says, oh, well, I'll tell you later, dad. Year later, kid's getting ready to be 9. His dad says, your birthday's coming up. What do you want for your birthday? Kid says, I want a box of pink golf balls. His dad gets him the pink golf balls, goes out, he plays, comes back, golf balls are gone. His dad says, what'd you do with the golf balls? Kid says, oh, well, I'll tell you later, dad. Year later, kid's going to be 10. What do you want for your birthday? Dad says. Kid says, I want a box of pink golf balls. Dad gets it for him. Kid goes outside and plays. Comes back, all the golf balls are gone. Dad says, what'd you do with the golf balls? Kid says, oh, well, tell you later, Dad. Same thing happens when he's 11, when he's 12, when he's 13, when he's 14, when he's 15. Now it's going to be his 16th birthday. Dad says, what do you want for your birthday? Kid says, a box of pink golf balls. Again, he goes, you know what? It's going to be your 16th birthday. This is a special day. Don't you want like a car or a truck or something like a normal kid would ask for? Most kids would ask for. The kid says, yes, Dad, I want a truck. And I want you to fill up the bed full of pink golf balls. So the dad gets him a truck, fills the bed full of pink golf balls. Kid takes the truck out, comes back. All the golf balls are gone. Kid says, what'd you do with the, dad says, what'd you do with the golf balls? Kid says, oh, well, I'll tell you later, Dad. Goes on his 17th birthday, 18th birthday, 19th birthday. All of a sudden, the dad gets a call one day. It's the hospital. His son's been in a wreck. Hospital says, you better get down or he's not doing so well. Dad runs down to the hospital. He's with his son, and it's not going well. And the son's fading. And the dad says, okay, son, if this is the last time I talk to you, I have to know all of these years. What have you done with the pink golf balls? And the kid says, oh, well, I... And then he died.
That's the joke?
Because it's so annoying. That's why it's supposedly funny. It's not funny. It's annoying. Yes, that's the joke. That's the joke. Don't worry. I warned the audience. The audience is gone. It's just you and I talking right now. Okay? Weren't you going to tell a joke? Like you said you had an annoying two-minute punchline. I mean, believe me, if we haven't lost the audience yet, they're gone now. So, I mean, you might as well tell it.
Okay. Guy walks into his candy store. And the guy at the store is the stupidest guy in the world. But so this guy comes up and he says, how much does your candy cost? The guy's like, I don't know. I really don't know. And he says, okay. So the guy's kind of smart at this point. He's like, you're supposed to say 99 cents. The guy's like, okay. And he says, so how sweet is your candy? And the guy says, I don't know. He says, oh, you're supposed to say it's really sweet. It's really sweet. And the guy's like, okay. And he says, okay, should I buy your candy? And the guy says, I don't know. And he says, okay, you're supposed to say if you don't, someone else will. And he's like, okay, if you don't, someone else will. So he buys the candy. And then the next day a robber comes in. The robber says, hand me all your money. The guy's like, I got not. It's 99 cents. And the robber's like, Robert doesn't want to hear this, so he thinks he's lying to him. And he's like, you messing with me? You playing sweet with me? And the guy's like, oh, very, very sweet. It's very, very sweet. The guy's like, I got my gun right here. Do you want me to shoot you? The guy's like, if you don't, someone else will. That's the joke.
That sucked.
I know. I'm trying to decide which one's worse.
I don't know. I thought I had the worst joke in the world, but now I have the worst. That sucked. I'm really glad that nobody's still listening to the show.
I know.
All right. Well, we'll give a send-off anyway to my father-in-law, at least, is still sticking around. Steve, that joke was for you, and until tomorrow, for Jacob's terrible joke, I'm Chael. Nobody's welcome, man. That was a bomb. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new, amazing app.
This one's a game changer.
There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon, Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife, Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more.
Plus, every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen.
And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more.
So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself.
Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.